What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks. We continue talking city budget shenanigans by turning now to the city of Oakland. But first, are you in a city where cops are eating up your funds and the people are suffering, social services are suffering? Let us know and we will try to cover. You can send an email to lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. All right, our guest to talk Oakland is Dr. Ayodele Nzinga, also known as Word Slanger, an arts and culture theoretician, practitioner working at the intersections of cultural production, community development, and community well-being to foster transformation in marginalized communities. She is the executive director of the Black Arts Movement Business District Community Development Corporation, or BAMD CDC, of Oakland, and founder and producer of BAMD Fest International Biennial, a month-long arts and cultural festival animating the Black Arts Movement Business District in Oakland, California. She has been Oakland's first poet laureate since 2021. For transparency, the FCC says, I have to tell you that I am engaged in several ventures with Dr. Ayodele Nzinga, and some of those ventures include exchanging of funds and payment. Good morning, Dr. Nzinga. How you be?
Good morning. I can be on a mad planet. How about you?
Be on a mad planet, too.
Yeah.
You already know my shenanigans for last night, but that's not for the air. Ooh, woke up feeling interesting this morning. All right, Dr. Nzinga, we all knew, right, that we were facing a budget deficit. And we knew it was coming because some of us have been screaming it from the rafters for years. You and your organization have been part of the Oakland Budget Coalition, which is a group, for my listeners, of nonprofit organizations trying to protect the social safety net in Oakland during budget cycles. Can you comment on how the coalition tried to approach the budget cycle this year, which differed from previous years? And I bring this up, and I'm going to hammer these people this whole 20 minutes we talk, because folks like D4 councilperson Janani Ramachandran and D7, formerly the interim mayor, Kevin Jenkins, keep saying things like, we the people just don't understand that difficult decisions need to be made.
Yeah. I think that that's interesting to categorize the people that you work for as being incapable of understanding complex issues. It's rather disrespectful. I think that we do understand. We understand because we live the reality of those choices. We either thrive or suffer because of those choices. And in many ways, this year's budget, or this particular budget, represents pigeons coming home to roost and the inevitability of people not understanding if you have a finite amount to something and one thing grows disproportionately, that it will eat everything else. So the difficult conversation becomes, what do we actually need to survive? What do we need to thrive here? And it seems like we're very dedicated to safety by policing. And it seems to not yield the results one would expect it to. And if we look year over year, and we're going to continue to add police, and their budget is going to continue to balloon, where their overtime could fund some arts ventures and fund a couple of nonprofits just with the overtime they receive, then we're bound to end up in a really interesting situation. And we've come to a time where it's almost arts and culture versus policing. An example I would give you is Juneteenth. And the city announced that Juneteenth celebrations would be civil and wonderful. And in reality, Lake Merritt was blocked off and barricaded. To block off and barricade cost money. To block off and barricade creates overtime. And on top of that, the next day on Juneteenth, officers guarded the lake, and any vendors that did make it through those barricades and set up were turned away by the police. So we spent an amount of money to prevent a cultural event that could have perhaps almost paid the cultural affairs manager's salary for the rest of this budget term. So we seem to be making choices, and I'm just not sure that those hard choices are also the smart choices.
I think it's important to point out that Lake Merritt here in Oakland was blocked off, and so was Mossward Park, where there's been a continuous sweep of the unhoused. And we need to move on to give the listeners context for why we're talking about arts and culture. But I just really quickly, the fact that, and it's not just Juneteenth, it's every time Black folks are getting ready to be the demographic that's leading some sort of celebration in the city, there's this mandate that comes out from city government that says this will be civil, right, or else. I don't see that happening with other demographics for their annual things, right? This mandate that y'all best behave, which to me reflects an attitude, a perception, a stereotyping of Black folks by this city that used to be Chocolate City, and birthplace of the Black Panther Party.
It's sort of an impossible thing when one person becomes responsible for everything people who have something in common with them do. It's a fact that the violence at the last Juneteenth celebration was not caused by people from Oakland. Mm-hmm. So why that should color the perception, I did that on purpose, color the perception of people of color here in Oakland is beyond me, unless you're just looking for a reason. That's how I feel.
Okay, so let's talk about this budget cycle. So like I said, we all knew that slashes were going to happen. We really all knew that the Oakland Police Department was either going to retain its current funding level or get an increase. They got an increase in overtime, in particular, the highest amount that they've been budgeted in any budget cycle in years, and still lower from the amount that they average to go over annually by exploiting the loopholes inside of the overtime non-existent policies that the city of Oakland can't seem to rein in. I digress. One of the ways that this council decided to balance OPD's fiscal irresponsibility on our backs was to freeze the funding for the cultural arts department manager position. For my listeners who haven't been following, I mean, this is the budget fight, right? Of all the things that are cut, this is what Oakland is really rallying around. What does the cultural arts department do, and why is the freezing of this position such a critical loss should it go through?
The Department of Cultural Affairs is responsible for managing art and culture and facilitating art making and creation by artists and makers. Every major city has a cultural affairs department. They solicit outside funding. They try to make relationships with funders so that funders know in particular about your city's heritage, its needs, its potential. Our former cultural affairs manager brought in over $1 million a year in his 7-year tenure. Now, they're also responsible for allocating city funds. Most major cities allot funding for arts and culture because they know how crucial it is to city making. So the Cultural Affairs Department manages these funds. They manage application processes and then vet and select and then manage the portfolios of those granted. These things are led by a cultural affairs manager who has to have a particular set of skills. He or she needs to be able to interact with funders. They need to be a visionary. They need to have a unique understanding of their city and the portfolios that their city manages. We've been blessed for the last 7 years with a brilliant scholar who has done exactly that. And he actually authored our cultural plan, one that we had been without a cultural plan for several years. Before his tenure. And in that cultural plan, It expresses the importance of belonging in Oakland. It says that belonging is considered in everything we do. So that means it would be considered in real estate development. It would be considered in what type of social services we offer and to who can access those. It would intersect your previous conversation about people who are unhoused. And it would also reflect the relationship with law enforcement and the community. So we seem to stray from belonging here in Oakland, and expediency perhaps is overtaking belonging, and falling into familiar tropes is taking the place of belonging. See, a couple budget cycles back, the city got it. And they invested more in art than they had in several budget cycles. And then all this has been pulled back. All of this has been taken back, mostly because of political conversations about how it feels to talk about putting money for public safety in the hands of people and community members and organizations, or whether or not public safety should be the sole purview of policing and apprehension, punishment, criminalizing. So cultural affairs departments are in every major city. They need cultural affairs managers to run them and to be the visionary North Star within them. And we've been eroding our cultural affairs department for decades. And the removal of the position, which is now being threatened, or actually it's been frozen, it's gone. The removal of a cultural affairs manager will all but ensure that the cultural affairs department will go from dysfunctional to dead. That would leave Oakland being the only major city without a cultural affairs department.
And Oakland has responded. We're going to play a clip from the Oakland City Council budget vote, which no one expected to be an actual vote, but we can talk about that in a minute on June 11th. Run that tape.
I want to bring up one of the challenges around arts and culture, because I think that is one of the ways that we push back on some of the challenges that we're experiencing. I think that's how we attract business. I think that is how we continue the culture so it's not gentrified out of this amazing city.
My name is Kedrick Armstrong. I'm a new resident of Oakland and the new music director and conductor of the Oakland Symphony. Thank you. My first visit to Oakland was in August 2022 when I guest conducted the Symphony's summer stage concert right outside these doors in Frank Ogawa Plaza. 2 years later, I returned to the same plaza, not just with a new job, but to celebrate alongside my new community to the music of internationally acclaimed South African DJ Black Coffee. These two cultural encounters right here in front of City Hall were extremely different in nature, but showed me something essential. Oakland understands the power of the arts and culture to sustain a city's spirit. This is not just felt by those who live here. Every guest artist who comes and steps into the Paramount Theater leaves speaking about the audience they met in Oakland, a vibrant, intergenerational, multicultural reflection of the city they've seen. Cultural centers are where we gather, organize, imagine better futures. Cutting their support undermines the very things that make Oakland, Oakland. So I urge you, let the Cultural Affairs Division do what it does best, invest in the people and soul of the city. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Graham Lustig. I'm the artistic director of the Oakland Ballet. And thank you so much for all of the work that you've done on this very difficult budget. I understand the challenges that you face. You talk about economic revitalization. How can you not have the arts in this budget? How is it possible? The arts are not a luxury. We are vital. We provide services to the community. The Oakland Ballet provides 8,000 local students with free dance education every year. And with the Oakland Symphony here and all of us other colleagues in the arts, it's really scandalous that the arts are not featured in any way in this budget. You have 1.4 for sideshows, but what about the organizations that put on real performances for thousands of residents here in Oakland?
That was voice of District 3 City Council Member Carol Fife and folks from Oakland's artistic community. I just want to shout out Kevin, the first Black conductor of the symphony in Oakland. Excited to have him in our city if we're able to afford to keep him. Dr. Nzinga, I just really quick, because I'm running out of time. Council Member Janani Ramachandran, who authored budget amendments, has defended freezing the roll, citing the city's $265 million structural deficit, a gap where she says a gap where regular spending exceeds revenue even in normal economic conditions. Ramachandran said the position underperformed, brought in limited grant revenue, and cost $300,000 annually, including benefits. She said the funds were better spent on direct services and public safety. I don't know what direct services got funded, and we know that the cops should not keep us safe. She also says that there are city resources for grant acquisition, including a citywide grant writer, a lobbyist, and a new grant writing position added in the two-year budget. Quote, Ramachandran says, this role did not successfully generate new grants for a very long time. And then she finishes with the disinformation, that's a nice way of saying lie, that the city's budget still allocates over $3 million to the arts to various programs and departments. I want to give you a chance to respond to any or all of that.
Artists and small cultural organizations overwhelmingly are the people who provide direct services to marginalized communities in Oakland, first of all. So if you want to directly serve them, then you serve the Cultural Affairs Department so that these small organizations can persist. The information about Bedoya's salary is inaccurate. And we're quoting the salary. All salaries, you know, you start at a certain place and then you max out at a certain place and you have benefits. First of all, what's wrong with a living wage? And I understand that a police officer costs you twice as much. So the statement about salary was inaccurate and stated in a way that was disingenuous. The council person knows better. Like you said, misinformation is a nice way of saying lying. And if we're paying twice as much for our choice, then economics can't be the thing. The money that supposedly is still allocated for arts and culture never leaves City Hall. It's money for the fees that the city charges you to do arts and culture. I mean, that ought to be a whole conversation, how much it costs to create in this city. See, artists bring in money, and artists feed public safety more than once, this direct hit to budgets. But then when you get ready to do something at the lake or at Defermery Park, the amount of money that you need to pay the city itself in order for your event to be safe is an exorbitant amount of money. So that money that Ramachandran says is set aside is money to mitigate those fees. So the money never leaves City Hall. It never touches the coffers of a small organization or an individual artist. It's smoke and mirrors. And to diminish the importance of what art can do, we always take the first hit. Like I said, every major city has a cultural affairs department, and they're busy doing things like creating programs that help us have understanding between different groups. We're a city that is in the last sieges of gentrification. We have a bunch of new neighbors. We have a bunch of people who've been displaced who aren't here anymore. The very concept of community is changing. We need vehicles that help us understand one another. So art generates conversations and gives people an inroad to civic issues. It opens up opportunities. People get employed. There are a number of jobs that surround making art that aren't being on stage or holding the microphone or being in front of the camera, that feed people, that raise families. Art either reflects society or shows you the way it should be. So it gives us an opportunity to address inequities in the places where we don't play well together. It increases community well-being. Art makes us well. It makes us feel better to be articulated and to sit together in the dark and have cathartic experiences, to be able to work through being human. It helps our physical health. It helps our mental health. It helps us relate better to one another. Art is where we imagine. Art is where we create things that do not yet exist. Like a way perhaps to live safely in the same city without trying to arrest half of it. Art helps people work through really difficult times, like a city with no money, or a country that seems to be melting under your feet, or a place where things are rolling back. So if you're not going to get federal art money, if you're not going to get state art money, and now you're not going to get city art money, the most true way to economic regeneration is to bring more people to our city. Art supports foot traffic for small businesses. It attracts, as Carol Fife said in that clip that you paid, it attracts businesses, the vibrance. Out of our mouths civically, we talk about the vibrant culture here of Oakland. That culture is not an illusion. This is the West Coast home of the Black Arts Movement, a movement that was felt around the world. It, in combination with the Black Power Movement, created so many things and so many freedoms we enjoy today. Ethnic studies, all range of feminine political discourses, all of these different things that rose up out of here that affected not just the city, but affected the entire nation and the world. All that came out of art and culture. So if we can see it and talk about it as a lure, then we ought to have the common sense to support it and realize its true importance, its ability to hold us all together and get us to another place. You know, they say one of the number one things that people are suffering right now in terms of mental health is loneliness. Art is a place to convince, put you in a room, a space with community, with people that you don't know, people that you want to know, and you have common, communal, positive experiences. Art carries its weight. We pay taxes. Art is an income driver. Last time I checked, it was like number 8 in the state overall. So locally, artists being able to live here, because if you can't make a living here and you want to stay inside, then you can't live here. So if we can't live here, then we don't pay taxes here. If we don't engage venues here, you don't collect taxes from those venue and space holders. We don't pay other artists. So these very vital, important, magical people have to go elsewhere to survive. That's to Oakland's detriment. If you want to remake yourself, you're going to need somebody to tell the story. You can't erase your history. I think we look at this on a national level and understand that erasure is not a good thing. So who's going to tell your story? Who's going to paint your murals? Who's going to help us imagine our way to a better place? And when I say the word imagination, don't think that art has no value. You heard what I just said.
Dr. Ayodele Nzinga, we've got to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.